Mirax leaned forward. How many more facilities like the one on Kominar does she have for stashing prisoners? Yella shook her head. No way to tell. In fact, I'm not sure the Xenovet facility was much more than bait. We backtracked the trail to Kominar, and there's more trail to follow. The bodies pulled from the graves could only have been there a couple of years, but they show more decay on the bones than we'd expect from the soil in that area. I think they were buried somewhere else, disinterred, and moved to Kominar. Once we figure out where they came from, we'll go to that new world and find more bait. Or a trap.
Right.
Yella shrugged and sipped her cap. We get so happy at having broken through the puzzle this person is laying out for us that we allow ourselves to think it was never meant to be broken. We figure we have the upper hand, but we're just following the trail they've laid. Interesting hypothesis. How do you test it? Yella winced.
There's the problem. The obvious way to test it is to have teams go back to Kominar and look around for clues that indicate the site was faked.
Mirax sat back and crossed her ankles. Of course, if you send teams back, you'll tip the enemy to the fact that you found the deception and will be following it up. She smiled slyly. Why not just go there off duty? Corin said you used to do that back when you were with Korsak. We can go without telling anyone. If we find something, we know you're right. And if we don't, that's a step forward, too.
Yella sipped at the calf and nodded. It could work. We'd have to go in very covertly, since the political situation is a bit touchy in the aftermath of the raid.
Mirax winked at her. I think I know a thing or two about getting into and out of spaceports without attracting too much official attention.
Yella thought for a moment, then nodded. It'll take me about 3 weeks to clear things up here.
Perfect. I can get some vaguely legit business set up on Kominar in that time.
Mirax smiled happily.
It'll just be you and me on a girl's night out.
So, you're not going to tell Corin?
Wedge and squadron business are what he's focusing on at the moment. I see no reason to distract him.
He's your husband.
Mirax laughed. He was your partner. Would you handle him differently?
Good point.
Yella fed a card into her datapad.
I'll prep a report and entrust it to Whistler. If anything goes amiss with us, he can turn it over to Corin.
It's a plan. Borsk Felia turned slowly from the window and found Aesir Selar standing just inside the door to his office.
You sent for me, Counselor Felia?
Borsk opened his hand slowly and let a little hurt tone play into his voice. You feel the need to be so formal, Captain Selar? I thought between us, between Bothans, we could be more familiar.
Aesir's eyes tightened. I merely wished you to know that I am aware of where the power resides, Counselor.
I see.
Borsk smiled carefully, then stroked his creamy chin fur. He tapped the data card on his desk.
You know what this is.
Aesir stiffened. I assume it is my application to adopt a Bothan orphan.
You do know, of course, that a hero of your stature would never be denied such an honor.
Her chin came up. Then you called me here to tell me the application has been approved?
You know that is not true.
Borsk slid the data card across the desk toward her.
I want you to withdraw the application.
What?
Please, Aesir. You know how impossible this is. You are involved in a liaison with a human. You want to marry him. We were prepared to indulge your dalliance. But no more. You cannot be permitted to marry him and create a family with him.
His name is Gavin Darklighter, and he's every bit as much a hero as I am.
Aesir's clawed hands gripped the nerf-hide chair.
I cannot believe you have the impudence to sit there and tell me what I can and cannot do with my life.
No.
Borsk kept his voice low and even, meeting her hot stare with a cold one of his own.
And I do not believe you can stand there and have the impudence to totally abrogate your responsibility to your people.
What?
Borsk paused for a second, less for dramatic effect than from a genuine need to gather his thoughts. If he could not control her and the direction she took, The disaster he saw looming on the horizon would swallow the Bothan people. Desperation fueled inspiration. He sighed heavily.
The Empire put forward the idea that any species that was not human was inferior. That is a message we had beaten into us during the Imperial period. Now you, a Bothan, are a hero who has attained parity with human heroes. In this capacity, you serve every non-human species in the New Republic very well.
Borsk drew his hands together, rubbing one over the other.
You, however, have a romantic relationship with a human. The message that sends is not one of equality. It suggests that somehow a non-human is not sufficiently worthy of your affections. Settling down for a life with Gavin Darklighter will confirm what the Empire has been telling us all along. We are inferior to humans, and even our heroes know that, which is why you, Aesir Salar, take as your life companion a human.
No, that's not right.
Aesir shook her head, but the earlier vehemence in her voice had lost something.
My choosing Gavin, it says there are a galaxy of possibilities out there.
Borg slowly shook his head and allowed a kindly note to enter his voice.
Possibilities, yes. But sterile ones, unfruitful ones. You're telling everyone that you would rather turn your back on the family traditions of the Bothans to marry a human than accept your responsibilities in our community. You have the misfortune to be a Bothan hero in a time when we desperately need Bothan heroes to be very Bothan. It's not fair. It's even cruel. But it is your lot in life, and your responsibility to deal with it.
She looked up at him. What do I have to do to be more Bothan? You would have me break off my relationship with Gavin, and then what? Resign from the squadron, return to Bothaway, to command my own squadron? Then, after a time and suitable negotiations, I would be wed to a nephew of yours? Perhaps a son?
Borsk narrowed his eyes. That would be an acceptable course, yes.
She nodded. And the alternative is what, to be ostracized, cut off from my people? I would get no Bothan child to raise, and you would use your power to see to it that Gavin and I never adopted any other child? You would make my life miserable. Because if I am unwilling to serve as the sort of example you want, you can make me into a negative example that will serve your purpose just as easily. Borsk nodded.
Your choices are clearly laid out for you.
You would have me break Gavin's heart.
Aesir hesitated for a second.
You let our people break mine for me.
Better one heart broken than the culture of a people lost forever.
Aesir straightened up.
I will need time to think on this.
It is understandable.
Borskfalia smiled easily.
Rogue Squadron's current mission should redouble your fame. At its conclusion, your decision would be expected.
She nodded once.
You'll see how truly Bothan I am, Counselor Felia. As power flows are warped and twisted, just remember it is you who made me remember and made me live up to my heritage.
Adjusting his blaster belt, Corrin Horn squinted across the Swift Liberty's launch bay and leapt halfway up the ladder connected to his X-Wing's cockpit. Wedge's voice crackled through Corrin's headset.
Good to have you with us, Captain Horn.
Sorry about that, General Antilles. I was recording a message for my wife and there was a bit of a line to use the equipment. Corrin looked over at the mission chronometer on the command console. We've still got 2 minutes to reversion. Besides, with General Salm's B-wings out there, we won't be needed at all.
Then they'll release us to hit ground targets.
Wedge's voice carried with it a hint of amusement.
The B-wings are tough, but they're still slower and less maneuverable than the eyeballs and squints we'll be facing. Salm may only leave crumbs behind, but there are crumbs.
I copy, Rogue Leader. Corrin switched his comm unit over to Three Flights channel. Okay, Rogues, all systems should be green. I don't know exactly what there will be out there over Lanare 3 for us to light up, but whatever it is, I want us shining really bright. As his X-Wing broke through cloud cover, Corin saw a lush green planet spread out before him. The target for 3-Flight was a hydroelectric power plant. The mission goal was for the X-Wings to eliminate any fighter cover around the power plant and suppress opposition, as a shuttle full of commandos came in and secured the place. Corin caught the flash of sunlight off a slender ribbon of water running through a canyon and dropped down toward it. Everything, save the twin Atgar 1.4FD P-Tower units built atop the dam, looked peaceful. The anti-vehicular artillery units with a laser cannon centered in a round dish looked decidedly hostile, but they came as no surprise. Corin stroked his trigger once, sending a quad burst of laser fire to burn through the P-Tower. But even before it exploded, an overwhelming sense of dread pounded him. Unthinking, he jerked the X-Wing stick to the left and saw a small projectile sizzle past him. The warhead exploded, spraying dirty snow into the air. Abort! They've got missiles! Before Corin could punch the throttle forward, something hit his low port stabilizer and detonated. Whistler's high-pitched shrilling and the ship's warning buzzers filled the cockpit. Tent! I've been hit. I've lost port 2 engine. Probably Stormies with Mersan PLX-2Ms. I've got to set down. You've got the flight. Warn control about the chips here.
I copy. We'll fly cover for you until they pull you out.
No. Get out of here, all of you. They might have other weapons to take an X-Wing down. Leave. But promise me you'll be back with help.
As fast as Orel is able. May the Force be with you.
Thanks. I'm going to need it. 9 out. Corin rolled the X-Wing once to give himself a quick look at the terrain below, then pushed his fighter over another ridge about 3 kilometers away from the dam. He shifted power into his repulsor lift coils, lowered the landing gear, and slowly, awkwardly, settled the fighter into place. General Wedge Antilles leveled his X-Wing out and glanced at the river valley where Corin had gone down. Wedge punched up the flight's tactical channel. Okay, Rooks. 3-Flight ran into trouble in Blue Sector, so keep your shields strong and eyes open. Wedge let his X-Wing side-slip to port, then flashed across the river.
Lead, I'm getting fire from the west.
Seeing a line of fire beginning to track his fighter, Wedge goosed the throttle back to full and began a port spiral to get some altitude. Out of hangars on the western perimeter of the river valley trotted a quartet of ATATs, Imperial Walker units.
On those walkers, Rogues. No time to be fancy, just swarm them.
Wedge kept his X-Wing very low, cruising in at a sharp angle. Tipping his fighter up onto its port S-foil, he banked toward a walker and switched over to dual fire. One double burst missed, but the second caught the walker in the hip. Superheated metal sprayed out. Black smoke issued from the walker's body. The Rogues made short work of the remaining walkers. Several runs left the walker's armor in ruins. Red bolts burned through their necks and dropped their heads to the ground. Bodies leaked smoke and froze in place, leaving the soldiers contained inside stranded 10 meters from the ground. Wedge once again punched up the flight's tactical channel.
Rogues, let's see what we can do about getting Corin out of Blue Sector.
Corin crouched in some brush at the edge of a ravine with a small ice-crusted stream bed at the bottom of it. Just north of his position, a tunnel had been bored through the granite hillside, and clearly once upon a time had been used to divert river water around the site of the dam. The tunnel mouth had been plugged with ferrocrete and 2 sets of durasteel security doors. 4 stormtroopers stood guard outside. Corin ran a hand over his mouth. This has to be what they were protecting with those chips. Getting in there and getting out again is clearly a job for a Jedi Knight. He fingered his grandfather's lightsaber, clipped to his belt. For an instant, Corin regretted having rejected Luke Skywalker's generous invitation to train to be a Jedi Knight. That sense of regret died quickly, however, as Corin thought about what he'd have had to give up to become a Jedi. He admired Luke Skywalker, but he also knew Luke was paying quite a cost. The fact that he was needed to solve problems all over the galaxy killed any chance for a normal life. And a normal life wasn't something Corin wanted to surrender.
Corin backed away from the edge of the ravine and began to work his way to the west. Crouched in the shadow of a snow-capped fallen tree, he scouted his way along a little depression. It ran for approximately 30 meters and gradually sloped up into a thicket of thorny zurbeer bushes. He was looking for a way around them when two stormtroopers came over the depression's northern lip. The lead stormtrooper caught his left toe on a root that had been hidden by snow and pitched forward. His blaster carbine flew further south and landed on the depression's south slope. The other stormtrooper watched his comrade fall, then came down the slope in a high-step gallop. The first stormtrooper rolled onto his back.
That's bit. If the designer of these helmets ever had to use them in the field...
They're very funny. Maybe you should just learn how to walk.
The second man sat down and removed his helmet. The first stormtrooper did the same. Steam rose from both of their heads as the second one reached for the canteen on his equipment belt. Corin's first blue stun bolt dropped the canteen from the stormtrooper's hand. The second one hit the same man again, tensing his body for a second, then slackening it. Two more bolts caught the first man as he made a dive for his blaster carbine. Corin quickly crossed to the stormtroopers, stripped them of their weapons, and tied them to a tree with the cord from their equipment belts. He shut their comlinks off, then swapped them end for end, putting the mic near the speaker on each. He turned the volume and gain up to full on both, then tied them tightly together and started north again. He got to the edge of the ravine and found himself 20 meters from the doors. The quartet of stormtroopers he'd have to take out were another 10 meters beyond the door, putting them a fair distance away as far as a blaster shot went. Not going to be easy at all. With his right hand firmly around the blaster's grip, he flicked the comlinks on. Because of the way they'd been tied together, an ear-splitting feedback loop immediately built and injected itself into the comm channels. The four stormtroopers below clapped hands to their helmets and wrestled to pull them off. As Corin ran, slid, and leapt down the scree slope. Once he hit the area outside the doors, he sprayed red blaster bolts over the distracted stormtroopers. Without pausing to check them for signs of life, Corin brought his grandfather's lightsaber to hand and thumbed the silvery blade to light. With one swipe, he carved a line down through the door, then kicked it in. Looking around at the room, he realized he was standing in what passed for the small installation's communications and security office. A dozen monitors showed shifting views of locations within the facility, and he took heart that only a couple of the monitors showed folks moving around. Those individuals were not stormtroopers and looked like technicians working on some sort of research project. Appropriating a data pad, Corin called up a site map and located one of the labs in the north wing. He headed off through the north corridor. The assembled workers, all in long white coats, barely glanced at him at first. When he produced and ignited the lightsaber, he was pleased to note that a number of them became decidedly pale. "I'm Captain Corin Horn of the New Republic. Either I'm here liberating you or capturing you. Your choice." He nodded toward a holoprojector on a table in the center of the lab. "Show me what you're working on, and you'd be cooperative, which prisoners never are." A small blonde woman moved to the datapad connected to the holoprojector and started to punch in a request for data. A man moved to stop her, but Corin waved the lightsaber through the air and its hum seemed to drive the man back. "Cooperative. You want to be very cooperative." The woman finished typing her request, and an image flashed to life above the holoprojector pad. Corin felt his guts tightening into a knot. "Correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks as if you were going to help someone build himself a Death Star." The briefing room felt hot and close to Wedge. Corin had flown on his wing in a borrowed X-Wing and now stood with him at the far end of the briefing table. Mon Mothma sat stone-faced at its head, with Leia Organa Solo at her right hand and Borsk Felia at her left. In the middle of the table, a holoprojector displayed a schematic of a Death Star. Borsk Felia's claws scraped along the table's matte black surface. "It is hard to believe that someone even as cruel as Krennel would resurrect Death Stars." Wedge pointed at the holograph.
It looks like a Death Star, but this is a decidedly scaled-down version. Corrin folded his arms. We've taken to calling it a pulsar station. Mon Mothma calmly pressed her hands together. Does Krennel have an operational version of the device? Wedge shrugged his shoulders. Unknown, but unlikely. Creating a ship this size would require incredible resources. The factories needed to turn out the finished pieces don't exist in Krennel's hegemony, or we don't know of their existence. Leia sat back, her brows knitted with concentration. The only way to confirm this would be to scout the systems.
That's the quickest way, Wedge nodded. We can run a T-65R through the system and have it pull up all the intel it can gather.
Leia frowned. The X-Wing recon version has no weapons, so such a run would be risky.
Wedge laughed. I wasn't thinking of taking it in all alone, even though an accompanied ship will be easier to spot. Fact is, though, we might want to be noticed. This news could be very divisive and hurt Krennel a lot. Remember that Krennel has been waging a propaganda war against the New Republic, offering his hegemony as a refuge for those we'd mistreat. If we reveal this project, folks who are inclined kindly toward him will reconsider, and the other warlords will have to wonder what this station would do to their holdings. If we make this public, we will force a lot of people to ask a lot of questions of Krennel.
Mon Mothma nodded slowly. This is an intriguing strategy, you suggest, General Antilles. The Council shall consider it.
Prince Admiral Delac Krennel slowly extended his mechanical index finger and pointed it at Isani Isard as she entered his office.
This is your doing, is it not?
Isard looked at the holoprojected display in the corner of the room. She graced him with the hint of a smile.
No, I have nothing to do with it.
Krennel shifted his finger to point at the projector. Its volume came up as General Kraken moved into the center of the image. He smiled briefly as the holocamera pulled back to reveal a Death Star image behind him. Bitter bile bubbled up into the back of Krennel's throat as Kraken began to speak.
1 month ago, as New Republic forces liberated the world of Venade 3, we uncovered a secret research and development base in which scientists were creating the next generation of weapons based on Death Star technology.
Krennel pounded his metal fist against his desk.
I had no such lab and no such project underway.
Isard nodded. I know. You could not have hidden such a thing away from me. This report by the New Republic is clearly a hoax, designed to provide them the moral high ground in their struggle with you. She began to pace.
We will have to fight this, of course.
Isard's features sharpened, and a razor's edge entered her voice.
Be aware of one thing, and never forget it, Prince Admiral. This war against you is a political war. They have forged this moral imperative to get at you, because they do not have the belly to exert the force they should. Perhaps they cannot. Perhaps Thrawn's assault hurt them more than we can imagine. Our counter-assault will involve 3 steps that will cause them to seriously re-evaluate their chosen course.
3 steps.
Krennel opened his metal hand.
And they are?
First, you will issue a statement concerning this charge against you. You will be distraught and angry. Do you remember Wint Gepora?
Krennel closed his eyes for a second and saw the face of an eager young man in a cadet's uniform from the Imperial Academy.
He was in my class from Press Belt 4. We were in the same company because our last names began with the same letter. I recall him vaguely.
Well, now he was your best friend there. He was from Alderaan.
This is true.
And died when the planet was destroyed. He was home on leave visiting his family. His death hurt you terribly. For the New Republic to suggest you would have anything to do with a project that would recreate the weapon that destroyed your friend. Well, those are tactics that are painfully imperial in nature.
The Prince Admiral pursed his lips, then nodded.
I can deliver that message.
And shed a tear?
I was a fighter at the Academy, not in the Thespian Union.
No matter.
We will slice in suitably altered material. Isar turned quickly and paced back the way she had come. The second thing we will do is release a series of files that will show that you do not have the resources in the hegemony to build such a project. One of them, the Corvus Minor file, will have been tampered with.
Colonel smiled.
Ah, yes, your little trap for Rogue Squadron. Perhaps this new bait will be more to their liking.
Indeed, I hope so. After Rogue Squadron is eliminated, the third step goes into play. You will attack Linade 3, hammering their garrison forces. We will insert insurgents who will undertake a covert war against the New Republic forces. And if we are fortunate, we'll inspire a popular uprising that will force them to devote more troops to holding the place than they ever intended.
Their moral justification is undercut. The storied unit is dead. And I have steel to back the political integrity of my realm.
Krennel slowly nodded.
It could work.
Isard smiled very coldly. It will work. And once you've shown the galaxy that it is possible to oppose the New Republic, you will be seen as the Emperor's rightful heir. At that point, we will both attain what we most desire.
Yella Wasiri shifted the tool belt on her waist. The Duraplast helmet and striped coveralls completed a disguise that started with dyeing her hair black and putting in blue contact lenses. Everything worked together perfectly to make it appear as if she were a worker for Kominor Holocom. Mirax had colored her hair red and had donned the business suit. She carried the datapad and used a stylus to point Yella this way and that, giving anyone watching the impression that she was Yella's supervisor, making a quality assurance run with her. They entered the lobby of a large office building and paused at the holo directory. With the air of a bored executive, Mirax punched up the data for the offices of Wouter, Rimke, and Vass, attorneys at law. The directory noted the offices were on the 18th floor and closed for the weekend, but Mirax punched a button to summon a turbolift to carry them upward. Mirax led Yella down the hallway to the double doors with the firm's name emblazoned on them in gold Orabesh lettering. She knocked firmly on the door, then waited. Under her breath, she commented, "Looks like a canvas 9400 lock. Not bad."
"You're kidding, right?"
Yella fished a square packet from a tool belt pouch. With a flick of her thumb, a slender tab snapped out. She flashed it down through the key card slot once quickly, then twice more. On the third try, the door clicked open. Mirax blinked.
"How did you?" "Intel has some interesting toys."
Yella inclined her head toward the open doorway. "File room first, then Wouter's office. If there is evidence here, we'll find it." In widening her search for details concerning the Xenovet facility, Yella had run across a local attorney named Mem Wouter. When Xenovet went into receivership, Wouter had been appointed a trustee for the firm. Mirax flipped on the glow panels and looked around at an endless array of shelves filled with data card boxes. "Well, this won't be an easy search." She pulled one box of data cards from a shelf and plucked out a card. "Look at this one. It's the Xenovet accounts." Yella took Mirax's data pad and slipped the card into it.
"Encrypted. But I'll make a copy, and we can slice it elsewhere."
A shiver shook Mirax.
"It's too easy. There's something about this I don't like."
Yella slipped the data pad into her coverall's thigh pocket.
"You're beginning to sound like Corin.
Don't tell me you have Jedi blood in you, too." "Worse, my father raised me to be suspicious."
"Then he didn't do a good enough job."
A man standing in the file room doorway slipped a blaster carbine from beneath his long coat and leveled it at them.
"You'll be coming with us."
He stepped into the room, allowing them to see another man, similarly armed, standing in the office foyer. Yella slowly raised her hands, and Mirax followed suit. Long years of training, first with Korsak and later with the Rebellion, told Yella that to make any sort of move would be suicidal. In the hallway, two more men joined the first two. They came out of the next office over. The legend on the door proclaimed them to be accountants. Yella smiled. "You ran surveillance gear in through air ducts, so the power hookups would be billed through the other office, not Wouter's."
"Nice.
Mirax nodded. Very nice. I bet Wouter didn't even know he was being watched, just like Isar, to think of that sort of thing. The lead man directed them to the maintenance lifts, letting the comment pass, but one of the others hitched for a second. The leader caught the hesitation as quickly as the yellow did, and stopped.
You two can keep quiet, or we stun you and carry you out of here in trash bins. Your choice.
The maintenance lift opened onto a dock area at the rear of the building. Beyond a trio of trash bins, Yella saw an alley leading off to the left. The main street lay behind them, with two of the kidnappers between her and it. As desperate as Yella knew the situation to be, there wasn't anything she could do about it. And in this narrow alley, shooting us down would be easy. Still, if I had a diversion... They'd moved past the first trash bin when the diversion came. A grubby man who had been digging in the trash asked each of them for money. He tugged on the sleeve of the first man in line, then swept on down, grabbing at Iella's hand. A snarled command from the man behind her brought a shocked look to the derelict's face. He lunged for the last kidnapper in line, slamming him across the alley and into a ferrocrete wall. The kidnappers all turned as their comrade yelped. Iella slid her finger onto the trigger of the holdout blaster the derelict had slipped her. She shot the third kidnapper in the back, pitching him forward. She spun to shoot the second kidnapper, but Mirax had already sized a foot to the man's knee, dropping him. Iella shot the first kidnapper in the face, then grabbed Mirax's hand and sprinted left into the alley. The alley broke to the right, and they raced around the corner, then stopped.
Sit, Spock. Dead end.
Mirax slapped her hand against a ferrocrete wall. Yella slid back behind a fiberplast crate and hunkered down, aiming her blaster at the alley mouth.
They're gonna be coming, and they're gonna be angry.
The muzzle of a blaster carbine sprayed lethal red energy darts through the alley, leaving guttering flames burning on the walls.
I'd rather take you alive,
someone called from around the corner. Yella sighted in on the corner.
Don't expect us to make this easy for you.
Yella watched, waiting for them to make a move. A muffled thump rolled down the alley, but she couldn't place the sound. Two men came rolling and stumbling past the alley mouth, driven forward and picked apart by concentrated blaster fire. They rolled to a stop in the middle of the alley, their clothes smoldering and their bodies limp. Yella glanced at Mirax.
What's going on?
Mirax shook her head. I have no idea, but I think I like it. An older man with a fringe of white hair on his head and a flowing white mustache ducked his head into the alley.
Don't shoot! I'm a friend.
Yella set her blaster down.
Who are you?
The man smiled.
Baz Kora. Mirax's father saved my life in the mines on Kessel, and he asked me to keep an eye on you. Meant to be here sooner, but we came as fast as we could.
Yella nodded. Don't worry. The guy you had in the alley had us covered. She pointed at the holdout blaster. He gave me this and got things moving.
Someone gave you a holdout blaster?
Coral's white brows arrowed in at each other.
I had no one in the alley. No one with a blaster.
Mirax frowned. The derelict, he wasn't yours?
Derelict?
Mirax looked at Yella.
Remember when I said this was too easy?
Yella nodded.
I do.
Well... I was wrong,
Mirax shivered. And I don't think I like it at all.
Wedge Antilles waited until the last of Rogue Squadron's pilots sat down, then hit some keys on his data pad. The holo projector it had been linked to served up the image of a solar system.
This is the Corvus Minor system.
Wedge hit another button and the image shifted.
This is the planet we're concerned with. Computer simulations indicate that one of its moons, Dithna, may be hollow. It is possible that Krennel is building his pulsar station inside it, or even building the station into it. Our mission is going to be a simple one. We'll do flybys on Dithna with a T-65R to collect what data we can, then we get back out.
Corin raised a hand. Who gets stuck driving the snoop scoot? Wedge pointed to the Quarren pilot sitting next to Tycho.
For those of you who don't know him, this is Narin Vakail. He flew with the Rogues back before most of you joined the squadron. The New Republic has had him on other duties for a while, but he's good with the recon ship. He'll be Rogue Alpha for this run.
Narin raised a hand, and Hobby reached over to slap him on the shoulder.
Other question.
Kajin looked up.
No reports of fighters being stationed on Bisna?
None. But intel is weak on that point,
Wedge sighed.
Look, people, we could run into anything out there. Clearly, because we're going in with a full squadron instead of just a flight for cover on the snoop scoot, we're prepared for trouble. Regardless, this is a recon mission, not a raid. We'll fight what we have to and roll on out of there.
With the tap of a couple of keys on his datapad, Wedge and Tilly sped the order confirmation for the mission into the rogue's computer on Linade 3. It traveled all but instantaneously to its desired destination, then was decoded and sent on to Admiral Akbar. During that process, copies of it were created and appended to other information transmissions, decoded and transmitted to a holoprojector for display.
Shrouded by the shadows of her sanctum, Isani Isard steepled her fingers as she reread the simple text message.
Corvus Minor, the moon Disna, 2100 hours local, 2 days' time. Splendid. Now I have Rogue Squadron exactly where I want them.
Baz Corral smiled broadly.
Booster, you look more fit than ever. Running this ship must agree with you.
Murax's father boomed a hearty laugh. His left eye, a mechanical replacement, burned red, while his brown eye reflected his joy at welcoming the shuttle to his errant venture.
Good to see you again, Baz. And you, Yella.
He held his arms wide open for Murax, but she poked a finger into his breastbone.
I don't think I'm talking to you, Father.
Booster winced.
What did I do?
Murax folded her arms over her chest.
You had Baz watching us on Kominar, that's what.
Her father looked confused for a moment.
But having him watch you saved you from being taken away and killed.
Murax patted Baz Corral on the arm.
Yes, having your friend keep an eye out for us did get us out of trouble. By the same token, for all we know, his presence in the building alerted the bad guys to something unusual going on. While he did pull us out of trouble, it could very well be your meddling that got us into trouble.
Murax took a deep breath, then let it out with a sigh.
Father, I've grown up. I'll always be your daughter, but I'm not your little girl. I'll accept your help when I need it, seek your counsel when I need it, and even listen to you when I don't. But I don't want you sneaking around behind my back doing things that you think need to be done. Do you understand?
Booster cleared his throat.
I could tell you what billions of parents have told their kids. You'll always be my child, and I'll always worry about you. Thing is, you know that. How I deal with it may not always be right from your point of view. But in this case, you are right. I could have gotten you and Baz and ELA in trouble by asking Baz to do what I did. That won't happen again.
He reached out with his right hand and took hers into it.
You went from being my little girl to the woman you are now. And I never got used to that idea. I figured I'd delay trying until I had no choice. Delay's over.
Murax let Booster draw her into a hug.
Yella held up a data card. That's all well and good, Booster, but we have other problems to deal with. This data card will confirm for us whether or not someone is setting a big trap for Rogue Squadron. In addition, we have the identification cards for the men Baz burned down. We need to check them to see if we can determine who they were and who they worked for.
Booster turned, flung his arms wide, and settled them around the shoulders of both women.
Come, ladies. The resources of the errant venture are at your disposal, and I am at your service. Whatever you want or need, you shall have. And anyone wishing to ambush Wedge and his friends will have more trouble than they could ever expect.
Murax stared at the data readout hovering in the air above the desk Yella had been given.
Okay, let me see if I have all this stuff straight. The financial records from Wooter's office
indicate that payments were made through financial institutions located in the Corvus Minor system. Iella swept a lock of hair behind an ear. That's what it comes down to. The files make it look like the payments were part of an intel op, which would make sense. The money was being paid to house prisoners from the Lusankya, so it must have come from some resources Isard had hidden away. Okay, I'm with you there. Murax pointed at a second set of data. Now here, you've matched dust samples laminated on the identification cards of the men who tried to kidnap us with traces of mineral content from the bones of the prisoners dug up on Kominar. Not exactly. The forensics tech worked up a profile of soil composition needed to accomplish the decay of the bones. It matches the dust on the ID cards. Those two samples also match a planetoid in the Corvus Minor system, Distna, which is where you think the Lusankya prisoners are being housed. Iella shook her head. That's where I think someone, Isard, wants us to believe they're being housed. I think they're bait to get Rogue Squadron there and into a trap. Mirax stood, a chill running through her. We have to tell them. I tried. No reply. I also spoke with your father, and that's why we entered hyperspace.
Mirax's comlink squawked.
Mirax, this is your father. Please join me on the bridge.
The two of them raced to the turbo lift. Booster stood before the large viewport.
Had we not been coming from Kominar, the trip would have taken another 12 hours. As it is, we will arrive at 2200 hours local time in a pole-to-pole orbit over the gas giant.
The fact that we got here so easily from Kominar, does that suggest even more strongly we're looking at a trap? Mirax said.
10 seconds to reversion.
The Twi'lek helmsman twitched his leku in time with his countdown. The white tunnel shattered into white needles that quickly resolved themselves into stars. Directly ahead lay Distna, a dark, rocky ball that looked completely devoid of life.
Sithspawn!
Mirax stumbled forward to the transparasteel viewport and pressed her hands against it.
We're too late!
Some pieces spinning fast, others floating placidly. Debris filled the space between the errant venture and Distna. Mirax spotted the shattered hulks of at least 2 X-Wings, and 2 bodies in the orange flight suits the rogues wore. As she scanned space for other pieces, she saw debris flare in the distance as it slipped into the gas giant's atmosphere. Then, 1 piece of debris slowly tumbled toward the errant venture. When she caught sight of it, her knees buckled, and she slid to the decking.
No! Emperor's black bones, no!
The S-foil bore the distinctive markings that left little doubt it belonged to her husband's X-Wing. She felt Iella's hands on her shoulders and heard her father's gruff voice fill the bridge.
Get recovery teams out there, now!
Booster snapped at his crew.
I want every piece of debris, every body, everything. Get it all now! Reports come to me alone!